Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Post Game Side Quest Patreon podcast, all about hot takes on cold games. I woke up this morning too early and I thought, you know what? I don't know that that's really accurate to this episode. I feel like these are games that have been taken out of the oven and left to cool on a wire rack, and now they're the perfect temperature. Some of them. Some of them are old.
I think our chilliest is our chilliest 2017, so that's not bad.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, for us. I'm Melissa. I am SideQuest Editor-in-Chief. My pronouns are she, her. And we're going to talk about games. I don't know why I felt like I had to add something.
That's cool. I'm Nassim. My pronouns are they, them, and I am the managing editor, which hopefully people know by now. This is our fifth episode.
I'm Zora. My pronouns are they, them, and I am the assistant editor slash copy ogre, which is my favorite title, but means perhaps less than it could. It's fine. Our copy editor rules. me and Emily have it down.
You truly do. I like copy ogre in particular because I feel like you have a copy finesse and that you are not like in a dungeon.
Yeah.
Club.
No, I'm very precise about my copy editing, and there's like nuance to my approach to language that ogres are not known to have. But here at SideQuest, we don't subscribe to those stereotypical interpretations of fantasy creatures, which are often realized. So. There.
you are a very skilled and what's the word I'm looking for?
Delicate,
refined ogre.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Also, I would like to real quick shout out the ogres in Tamara Pierce's books because they rule.
Yes.
Wait, what book are ogres in?
They're in Wolfspeaker, which is the second Dane book.
They're also Oh yeah, that is the second Dane.
That's where they show up the most. I feel like they're mentioned. Right. They like come up other times, but
probably
that's where like
books.
The main ogre character. And she rules.
I need to reread those. I don't remember ogres at all.
Yeah, it's most of the second book with Mara. Is that her name?
Mora.
Yeah. It was, she's like
Mara,
trying to get her home back, I think.
Yeah, so the ogre's name, I don't want to get it wrong, but the ogres are brought over. Am I about to spoil Tamara Pierce books on our video game podcast? We did intros before we got distracted. Anyway, the ogres are brought over from the immortal plane and immediately enslaved.
Yep.
And the book is like, that's bad. So the ogre character's like, yeah, it's jacked up, and I would really just like to like have a farm and be chill.
Yes.
But instead, these weird humans are making me do hard labor. I would be happy to help you really ruin their day. It's great.
I haven't read those in such a long time. I need to revisit the Dane books.
I reread them all like last year. Anyway.
Let's talk about video games.
Video games.
So this week, as of today, actually, it is no longer 2020.
Woo!
We are freed from the arbitrary shackles of the previous year. Are they arbitrary? Yes. Do symbols have power? Sure. So you know what? We're celebrating as best we can, even though everything's ostensibly the same. So, of course, that means that us being us, we're going to look at the games that we played last year, because who cares about looking into the future?
I can't see. Every time I look forward, it just blanks out.
Yeah.
All I know is what happened.
Yes. So we're going to talk about two games each. One game released in 2020 and the other released whenever, because time is arbitrary. Calendars are arbitrary. Who cares? Anything can be 2020 if you believe. I don't know why you'd want to do that, but you could. So you may notice that episode 5 is releasing before episode 4. And that is because time is fake and an illusion.
Because I got top surgery in October and forgot how to edit audio. So
yeah.
Sorry about that.
We wanted to get this episode out while it makes sense to do so. So that's what we're doing. This whole end of the year thing, it's been a real time. I think we can all agree on that. It has been time.
It really has.
One of those.
The thing is, we have the episodes recorded. They're just not out yet. So it's coming. Zora, yes. I would like to hand the stage to you to tell us about one of the best or most important or most interesting games that you played in 2020.
Yeah, so my first game that it's less, I don't know that I would phrase it as like best or even necessarily most important, but I think the most pivotal game I played in 2020 was the Final Fantasy VII Remake. It was the first JRPG that I played in many, many years. And certainly Whoa. The first JRPG. I think I've like played around in JRPGs, but I hadn't played through a JRPG since high school.
Dang.
I'm just thinking of how many I know you're playing right now.
I'm playing no fewer than 3 right now, and depending on how you count, it could be up to it might be up to 5. So when I say Final Fantasy VII R was pivotal, I'm not kidding. Yeah, so it was the first, basically in 2012, I was playing Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword, which is not so much a traditional JRPG, but it was like the last big ass game that I played before I went to college. And then I went to college and I didn't have time to play video games. And then I graduated from college and was broke and like really engaging in the gig economy. And didn't have any time to play video games. And then I got a job and moved to New York, but was still kind of running off my gig economy time and didn't have time to play video games. And then quarantine happened, and I have a stable job. So I was still working, but I wasn't commuting. And Final Fantasy came out in April, and it hit me like a train. And I put 50 hours into it in like a month maybe, which is unheard of for me because I don't put that much time into video games. And it was incredible because I haven't played a JRPG. Like the last JRPG I played before that in its entirety was Tales of Symphonia.
Damn.
Which came out in like 2003 or something. 2001, I don't remember exactly when. And so there's practically 2 decades between these two games. And Final Fantasy VII, like the Final Fantasy series and the Tales series they're both JRPGs, but they have different storytelling fundamentals. But the thing that I always really liked about Tales of Symphonia is that the towns each had a lot of their own character. Like they were simple GameCube graphics, but they felt lived in and interesting. Mm-hmm. And then I played Final Fantasy VII R, and the towns it's one city, and it's huge, and different parts of it have different character. Like, I could tilt the camera up and look at that horrible pizza in the sky. running from place to place felt like going from neighborhood to neighborhood in the real world, and all of this was something that I had never, ever experienced in a JRPG before. And so it totally threw me for a loop and was really a really good thing to look forward to and be excited about when quarantine was just beginning and we were all sort of reacclimating to what is now the new horrible normal. Mm-hmm. But it's also the first time in my life that I've been in a place where I didn't have 700,000 things putting demands on my time, and I could like sink in to a game that was part of the zeitgeist. And so it was amazing to have this experience. And I haven't played Final Fantasy VII before, so all the story was new to me as well. And I have a lot of gripes with Final Fantasy VII R. I talk about it in the first episode of this podcast. I can talk about my problems with the world building and the characterization and the fucking writing until I'm blue in the face. But the reality is that the experience of diving into that game reinvigorated my love for JRPGs, which are a genre that I've always super loved but had trouble keeping my attention on because I have ADD, and didn't realize that was why it was so hard for me to play games for a while. I just realized yesterday that the reason that I never knew what the fuck was going on in Tales of Symphonia is because I was tuned out in the last 3 seconds of a cutscene, which is when they tell you where you need to go.
Oh no.
every single time. So a cutscene would end and I'd be like, I guess I'm just gonna wander the map for a while. But I'm better at managing my attention. And so Final Fantasy VII R reminded me how much I love these games and how they are actually, like, I can access them. I can purchase them and play them on the consoles that I have. I don't just have to, like, sit here bemoaning a lost age. I can, like, go buy games from 2003 and play them with my hands. And long story short, I have a new cell phone and I'm playing three different Tales games at the same time. One of them is on the phone, one of them's on a 3DS, one of them's on the PS4. And also, I'm halfway through Final Fantasy X. Happy New Year!
You're the JRPG.
I know.
God, I'm going to play so many games. I'm so excited.
I'm so glad.
In contrast to Zora, I'm always playing JRPGs because I'm such a sucker for them. They're everything I want. They tap into, like, an art style that I have a lot of nostalgia about when it's, you know, just like anime style, and then tend to be stories that I really enjoy. So perhaps unsurprisingly, the first game I will talk about, I will actually save the game that changed my life, I say hyperbolically with a flat affect, for the end. And I will actually start with Fire Emblem Three Houses. Although I did note that Hades was my runner-up. I just didn't spend enough time with it, I think, in order for... Although I have spent a lot of hours on Hades these past couple weeks.
The hours I've put into Hades.
Yeah, a lot. But I'm choosing Fire Emblem for a couple reasons. It kept me a lot of company when my husband was out in the field, because he's a geologist. So he would go out for 5 to 10 days, come back for 2, go back out into the field. And so I just played a lot of Three Houses. And it was also while I was doing the bulk of my thesis work. So my thesis is defendable as is, but I still have to work on it. But my thesis takes place in a magical monastery. And so I was like, I need to bring this world more to life. Oh, look, here is how it feels in 3D. And I have trouble imagining things. Like, I can't visually picture things, which makes it very difficult as a fantasy writer, let me tell you.
Yeah, same.
It's hard. It's, oh God, a lot of Googling. But being able to walk around this, like, 3D magical monastery helped me, like, picture things. And so, like, I have a lot of, I'm going to forever associate my thesis with this game since I played so much of it. Yeah, it's just such an easy, and I think as far as Fire Emblem goes, this is my third one, and it's definitely been the friendliest out of all of them. So I think for people who are potentially interested in tactical RPGs, it's a friendly entry into that kind of gameplay. Although I agree, again, to like mention our episode one with Zora's issues about how the urgency works in the game. I definitely
think it's better than in Final Fantasy. I'm willing to forgive it way more than I am Final Fantasy. I can also agree in that it is Fire Emblem Three Houses is another one of the JRPGs that I played this year. Oh, that's my fifth one, by the way. That's the fifth one that I've been. I played a ton this year also, and it's really, really easy to get into. I like the difficulty, mm-hmm. like the kind of three-dimensional isometric, thank you, difficulty choices a lot as a way to get into the game. You can choose to play it on hard or on easy or on normal, whatever. You can play it on hard or normal difficulty, and then casual or classic, like, gameplay. Yeah. And in casual, if your people die, they come back. They just got hit really hard. It's fine. And on classic, if they die in a battle, they're dead in real life.
Like, yeah, which is how traditional Final Fantasy or Final Fantasy.
And so it means that I was able to play it on hard casual.
Yeah, I did
and
too.
I play like I'm playing on classic, but it means that I'm not like fucking terrified all the time.
I think hard casual needs to be like more of a, like, I feel like that's my gaming approach.
Yeah, mine too.
I'm a hard casual.
I love to be challenged, and I love to have a real quick backdoor.
Yeah.
Where I can just give up.
Yep. Well, I don't want to miss out on the story content if someone dies. Like, this was a problem in Path of Radiance, which I can dig these up. Some of my first pieces for the site were about Path of Radiance, and like forever ago. And I loved this game so much. The story was amazing, but like my first playthrough, a major character who I didn't realize was a major character died, and so I missed out on this huge part of the character in the story. And my last thing on Three Houses, which will lead into my later one, is that it got me back into fandom in a little limited a bit, in terms of fan fiction. And I, you know, have a Sylvic zine I spent money on and a picture of them on my wall. I mean, it's like, and I have Edelgard stuff coming in. I mean, it's just like, this is not stuff I've participated in since I was in high school. And I'm like, oh no, I'm regressing back 15 years.
I have a question about fandom. Which is that I'm not particularly into fandom, and I don't typically buy like fandom stuff. I did when I was younger, but I've become my interests have just shifted more towards like original work. But anytime I see a fucking Hunter x Hunter zine, I like black out for 30 seconds, and then at the end, I've purchased it.
I love this.
If you have anything like any, what is it, fandoms like that, please tell.
I'm usually pretty conscious about my purchasing choices because I'm going, oh no, I'm spending so much money on this thing that I shouldn't be, you know, quote unquote, shouldn't be spending money on. My mom sent me, I promise this is relevant. She sent me money for my birthday, and I told her, I was like very shamefaced. I was like, here are the fandom pictures that are now on my wall that I spent with this money. And usually when I was a child, she would constantly reprimand me for spending my money on that kind of stuff. And then she was like, well, you know, it's not my choice. It's not the choice that I would make, but it's who you are. And I was like, I can't tell if this is progress or not.
No, I don't do it for anything else. And it's so funny. I think the thing is that also like Hunter x Hunter is not my biggest fandom. I'm not involved in fandom at all. Yeah. For Hunter x Hunter. I just, those, like, the manga that got me into comics, all of comics. Worth noting that I work at a manga publisher now, folks. The very first one was Ranma One Half, which my father bought for me because he does not understand how to, like, look at a book before he gives it to a tank.
Oh my god, yeah.
And then a couple years later, a year and a half later, he handed me the first Hunter x Hunter volume, which, similar problem. He did not look on the inside of that book before he handed it to me. And so Hunter x Hunter has been this like factor in my life for basically my whole like agentive media consuming life. And you know, sometimes you just stare into the void and the void hands you a Kurapika zine and you're really happy about it.
I think I just looked around my office, and I think the uniting theme here is one that I never would have picked out as far as, like, why do I have so many pictures of this? And the answer is Finn Star Wars.
Oh.
I don't care that much about Star Wars.
No, you don't.
But by God, do I have a lot of Finn stuff everywhere surrounding me, Finn specifically.
Finn rules is the
thing. It's true.
It's true.
I own three pop vinyls. Two of them are curses upon my house, upon my soul. They are for the viewer. They are the Donald and Goofy pop vinyls from Monsters Inc. in Kingdom Hearts. They haunt my nightmares and also my home. thank you, Adam. I hate you. The other one is General Leia. So, like, I feel you.
I bought this partially because it's horrible, but I bought the one of the really bad Poe Dameron action figures.
Oh my god.
Anyway, sorry for that diversion. I just got excited about zines.
Yeah. No, I love it. I have two Finn zines.
Fuck yes. This rules.
That's amazing.
Apparently that's it for me. It's Finn Star Wars. I see a Finn Star Wars thing, and I have to have it. But it's only it's like soft Finn. It has
yeah.
To be
oh
soft.
No. Oh, also, yeah. Me with the Hunter x Hunter stuff, it has to be soft.
Yeah, like I have. So right in front of me, I have a print from Becca Farrow. That's like a 1920s AU of Finn, Poe, and Rey. And then I have Little Corvus's cute Finn witch print. And then I've got the Finn witch zine. And then I've got the other Finn zine, also from Little Corvus.
I love this.
This is good.
And now we've all learned something about one another.
Yes.
Yes. And that's really what podcasting is.
It's true. Yeah, I don't really have a neat segue here because I don't participate in the Red Dead fandom. But I did. I chose Red Dead Redemption 2, which I feel like is a predictable choice if you listen to this podcast, and maybe not such a predictable choice otherwise, because I sure did talk a lot about it in our first episode. But I'm not going to talk about the plot so much as like what it, like why I chose it, which is primarily that this year has been a mental health journey for me, as I'm sure it has been for all of us.
Yeah.
But like I wrote about, I did a review, a quote unquote review of Variations on Your Body, which talks a lot about my mental health experience this year. And
that's a really good piece.
Thank you. Red Dead Redemption 2, I kind of picked up at the same, around the same time that I started therapy, which happened to be the week before Washington went into lockdown. And a lot of my therapy process this year has been learning how to handle things healthily, which I have not done. I am 32 years old, so that's a lot of unhealthy habits to unlearn. And Red Dead Redemption 2 is the first game that I've played in a long time that does that big all-encompassing thing where like it's such a mixture of things that I like that it occupies a very large space in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that unfortunately for me I haven't really found in indie games, which is what I primarily play. But like thinking back, the last game I think that really like did the same thing for me where it like occupied a large space in my brain was the Dragon Age series.
Mm-hmm.
But Red Dead Redemption 2 this year kind of stepped in and took that place to where when I was playing it, I was playing Red Dead Redemption 2 and I wasn't doing anything else.
Yeah.
Mm.
And in that space, especially like March to June, I think, which is when I played the bulk of it, was when I really needed that, like, I need something that's going to quiet my anxiety enough that I can like take a full breath. And that's exactly what Red Dead let me do, both because it's like huge, like the game world itself is enormous. It has so much to do in it. Like, yes, I can do the story. I can also go rob a bank. I never did that unless it was story required. I could just ride my horse around. I could say hello to everybody in the town. And that was fun. I could play poker until two in the morning, real life time. I could, you know, kidnap people for no reason. I didn't usually do that either. I could go hunting to make money. I could catch horses to make, like, there was just so much at any given moment that I could do. And it was, for me, the perfect mixture of this really compelling story, which, like, admittedly, it takes a while to get into. The beginning's, like, pretty dull. It's like exciting event-wise, like it's like, oh, wolf attack, oh, rescue people from the homestead, oh, gang violence or whatever. But the actual like good story, like the part about like Arthur not being a sack of garbage, all of that does take probably like 20 hours to kick in or something like that. Maybe if you play it more directly than I do, then you can get to, because I am notorious for like, the first thing I do in any video game is like I run off a cliff just to see what happens. So I am not the person, I'm not a speedrunner here. I'm an explore every area of the map and see what the game allows me to do kind of person. But the story is really compelling, especially the further you get into it. And then it also has like this just great amount of ways to be idle and distract yourself without high stakes, because sometimes, like, you know, when the old anxiety is acting up, mm-hmm. I don't want to do a mission that's very stressful. Sometimes I just want to ride around on my horse and pick flowers, and the game lets me do that too. I can pick flowers and then I can turn them into tonics. I can eat them, I can feed them to my horse, I can pet my horse, I can brush my horse's mane, I can go fish, I can say hello to everybody in my camp. like all there's just so much to do in it that it took up my brain in a time when I really needed something other than the world to take up my brain.
Yeah, fair.
And so, like, I don't think I would count Red Dead Redemption 2 like among my favorite games of all time. I think it's a super, super good game. I really loved it, and I'm really glad that I eventually got over myself and played it. But I think that if one piece of media that I interacted with this year sticks out in my memory, it's going to be that one. And then like a handful of others, like the ending of The Good Place. I mean, what else did I do this year? I don't know. Oh, I reread all of Animorphs. That's up there too.
Hell yeah.
Animorphs is so good.
I know, but that's also the space that Final Fantasy occupies for me. Mm-hmm. Is it like absorbed my whole brain when I was playing it, and it had this additional power of like unlocking the completely illogical and unreasonable restriction I had placed on myself and my play. And it also like there's a joy in consuming something not uncritically but indulgently, I guess. Yeah. Because I can criticize Final Fantasy until I'm blue in the face. But while I was playing it, the game is so huge that it felt like I could allow myself to just sort of sink into it. Because I knew that there was going to be, you know, even if I was 20 hours in, I knew there were still 20 hours to go. So I wasn't like preparing myself for an ending. I wasn't adjusting to the beginning. I was just like, this is the game. I am in it. This is where I live now. And I think that's one of the reasons that it can be easier to sink into these AAA experiences than small indie stuff, just because AAA studios have the resources to make a 50-hour game.
Yeah. I think similarly, just playing Red Dead Redemption 2 this year reminded me that I don't actually hate AAA video games.
Yes, that also.
Because that's kind of how I've felt over the past few years. For a variety of reasons. Obviously, the way that they're made is bad. And so that definitely taints the experience. But that doesn't mean that, like, I am incapable of enjoying them as, like, games. Yeah. Which is kind of how I felt. And I don't know what, like, I don't think I played a AAA game that, like, super disappointed. I guess maybe I started Mass Effect Andromeda and couldn't get into it. Maybe that's what kicked this off.
I mean, I think also worth noting that like we live in a very I was talking about this before the podcast with regards to podcasting also we live in a culture like not a grand culture but a macro or nope a micro
yeah I think you're right
micro culture there we go that puts a lot of emphasis on indies and very rightfully kind of holds them up as good games, right? Like a game doesn't have to have AAA money to be a good game. But that doesn't mean that if a game has AAA money, it isn't a good game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it can help us to remember that like a lot of the world plays AAA games and they are good. Like, yeah. For a reason.
I think another reason I fell off was just the types of AAA games that people were celebrating were not ones I was getting into.
Yep.
This was a big problem for me with Nier Automata.
I love that game, but
I couldn't get into it. Like, yeah. I don't know what it was. I couldn't get into it. And I was like, I guess I just hate AAA games since this is like a good one and I don't like it. And I just like fell off of them for a while.
Well, it was like the indie darling of AAA games, or people who typically have indie darlings were the ones who liked that game. But it's like depressing. It's very gray. Yeah. It fucking rules for me, but I didn't finish it because I got sad.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I want to give another shot later on, but like I think there was that one, and then there was like a couple others that were like really celebrated for one reason or another, and I tried to play them and I was like, I guess I just hate AAA games now, and I'm gonna hate Red Dead because I don't like AAA games anymore. No, it doesn't matter that I love the first one. Obviously my tastes have just changed, and my husband is like, please play the horse game. Please play the horse game. And I played the horse game and I loved it. So
A+.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. And I'm glad I played it. I'm glad I played it this year. And if you need a big thing to take your mind off of things, like there's just so much in Red Dead. There's just so much. It'll take up your whole brain if you like a sad cowboy. And I do.
All right. I don't have a segue. But my other, I literally, there's so little in common between these two games.
You could put a sad cowboy in it, right?
You could try.
I'm gonna do it. That's my 2021 goal.
Fuck, Missy, that's so good. That's so fucking good. Okay, well, my second game, well, which came out in 2017, is Monster Hearts 2. I don't know when Monster Hearts 1 came out. But Monster Hearts 2 is Avery Alder's queer teen monster RPG. It's a Powered by the Apocalypse system, which means it runs on, if you know Apocalypse World, it runs on a similar system, but it's pared down significantly. So it's got like 6 total moves in the whole game, and which makes it a very, very streamlined, easy play experience. It makes it lean more towards storytelling game than like traditional RPG. If you put them on a spectrum, The Quiet Year, which is a storytelling game where you build a city, is on one side. D&D is on the other side. Apocalypse World is right in the middle. Monster Hearts 2 would be like kind of 2/3 of the way from The Quiet Year to Apocalypse World in terms of like rule crunchiness. That was a very long way to describe a very specific aspect of this game. Anyway, it's a tabletop RPG, which I realized I didn't say until just now. And my friends and I have been playing a campaign with like, if we're being loose about it, we played our first session in 2018, early 2018 probably, and our season one ran from then until August or September of 2018, and then we picked up with some of the same characters in late 2019, unclear. I don't remember time before quarantine, but we were definitely playing by the time quarantine started.
That sounds true to me, because this is where you play Morgan, right?
Yeah.
Morgan?
This is where I play my character Morgan. Elaine Morgan. She's terrible. I wrote a piece about my OC, Elaine Morgan, called Elaine Morgan is Terrible. And playing Monster Hearts with my friends has been a really fundamental and wonderful part of quarantine. We play maybe once a month. We want to play, like, when we're in a role, we play once every 2 weeks. When we're not on a role, we play maybe once a month. And it's been incredibly wonderful to, like, step into this character who I love to play because she's an absolute asshole. But season 2 Morrigan, like, has the capacity to love in a way that season 1 Morrigan didn't, because she's a little bit healed.
That's really interesting, actually.
Yeah, like, it wasn't that season 1 Morrigan was incapable of feeling love, it's just she literally couldn't do anything with those feelings. Like, she didn't know what, she was busted. But season 2 Morrigan has, like, grown up, she's healed from that, she has friends and can acknowledge she has friends and people she cares about, but she's still a prickly little asshole. And I love her, and I love to get to play a jerk. So stepping into her has been really fun, and as I become, like, a professional person who in my professional life has to be very on top of things and diplomatic and considered, it's fun to play a character who in her professional and personal life can be very impulsive and say the things that I wish I could say to my coworkers sometimes. If you're my friends, I'm not talking about you. I promise. Anyway, it's very fun to step into Morgan's skin, but it's also been really, really wonderful to have a reason to hang out with my faraway friends during quarantine and have some routine associated with that. You know, I miss my friends, and I miss just like sitting aimlessly in a room with them, but I love more than anything in the world creating things with my friends. And to hang out with somebody while playing a game and allowing ourselves to like get off on tangents and talk about whatever has been incredibly like reassuring and good through this incredibly strange, awful year.
Yeah.
And we're wrapping up soon. We've been wrapping up for maybe 3 months, which, you know.
Such is the nature.
But I'm a lot less torn up about it than I was when we were wrapping up season 1. Because I feel like Morgan has grown and I don't need her in the way that I once did. But that doesn't mean I don't like to spend time with her. And it obviously doesn't mean I don't love to spend time with my friends. Yes. And all of that is through, and Monster Hearts is the vehicle through which we do that. And so I really love this game.
Someday I will play Monster Hearts, and in it I'm going to make a sad cowboy.
Oh my god, it's going to be so fucking funny. The game doesn't really provide you with the resources to do that.
I'll do it. I'll find a way. This is my nature in any kind of tabletop RPG. I DM Dungeons and Dragons for my friends, and I also play a himbo cleric.
Yes.
D&D doesn't really like the idea of having a himbo as your as a healer. It's like, hey, you might want to up your wisdom or your intelligence so you can cast more spells. And I'm like, no. No, he got stronger. He's ripped now. So I keep giving, anyway, we don't need to get into the mechanics. But 2020 Monster Hearts Sad Cowboy. It's happening.
Oh, great. Someday maybe I'll learn to GM. I know I have all of the skills, but I sure don't have the attention span.
I will volunteer to be your guinea pig.
Okay, well, I can't promise you that I'm volunteering to... I've tried. I've tried so hard, and I can't make myself prep. I don't know what's wrong with my fucking brain. But I can't do it.
It's hard.
I've always been like, I have ADHD, but it hasn't really like held me back. I'm really lucky. I have really good coping mechanisms. And then I'm like, I physically can't GM because I can't make myself concentrate for longer. And I go, wait.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. Maybe this is actually an issue. Anyway, Nassim, what game consumed your whole brain?
Perhaps to exactly negative people's surprise, it is Persona 5 Royal, which I also talked about in our first episode. And I realized I ruined our flow of games from the first episode, but I guess we also did talk about Fire Emblem, so.
We sure did. Cool. I sure did.
Yes, so, yeah, I talk about this game whenever I get a chance to open my mouth and say, have you heard the good word of our Lord Savior Persona 5R? So yeah, I talked about it in our latest roundtable as well. I think in terms of gameplay hours, let's see, I played it twice back to back. So I probably put in about 200 hours.
Damn.
It's because the original vanilla base game Persona 5 was 108 hours was my first run through. Whoa. Yeah, December did it in I think 80 something. Yeah. And so then Royal, which adds a whole other section of content, I think my final was 127 hours, 130 hours, something like that. And then I rushed through a second playthrough and skipped all the cutscenes. Anyway, so vanilla Persona 5, I super loved it. I played that in 2018. Which is a couple years after it came out. And it was, you know, a story of misfits struggling against an unjust society and also having a power to make a difference. So playing that game in 2020 when the pandemic struck, because the game was released at the end of March in the US. So yeah, so I started playing it with quarantine, and it was just really nice to be like, ah, yes, society is corrupt and also we can change it. And Royal just, yeah, it does absolutely everything better. Like if someone wants to pick up Persona 5, pick up Royal. The gameplay is just a lot smoother and the story is more interesting. And my favorite character actually has like a whole everything now. He like fundamentally changes the nature of the game, which basically means my ship is canon. And as I just mentioned that I'd gotten back into fandom, this is the game that also got me back into fandom. I have two posters up. I have three Nendoroids. Two posters, two Pop Funkos. Anyway, the collection keeps growing and it's a problem. I cosplayed as Joker for Halloween, even though we couldn't do Halloween. I mean, it's an issue. So, yeah, thanks to it also, this will be my final word, I think sums it up really, really well, is I discovered a term for what I've been experiencing since childhood, and that is a hyperfixation. Oh, I didn't know this was a thing that people experience. I thought this was just me.
I have fully, for years, I've been like, I'm sorry, I'm talking about ADHD again. I've been like, yep. I don't really have, maybe I don't really have ADHD. I'm just making it up because I don't get hyperfixations. And then a month ago, I played the Tales of Crestoria mobile game for 5 minutes and then purchased 3 other Tales games. And yeah. I had to take a good long look at myself because I don't do things like sink 200 hours into a game. Like I don't do that, but I do make weird commitments for like several years.
Yeah. my life.
And I'm like, I need to know everything about the production like method. Like the reason that I want to play all these Tales games is because I have to know. I have to understand how Tales Studio grew and changed over the years. And I'm like, why?
I fail to see an issue with this, but I can understand how maybe another part of your mind's like, wait.
Hyperfixations. They're real.
They're real.
And I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if a therapist would like look at what I'm doing and classify it as a hyperfixation because I am not a trained mental health professional.
Right.
But it definitely is like a commitment to this franchise.
Yeah.
That is not along like typical lines of playing and enjoying a game.
Yeah, I feel that my parents used to call them my obsessions, which never felt the right word. I don't have OCD, but I do have anxiety and depression. And, you know, it started, I think Pokemon was the first one for me, but it's been like this since I was a kid. And they've always been like, yeah, Nassim has these obsessions. And so now I'm like, wait, but this is a thing. Like, this is a thing. Yeah. This is a coping mechanism too. And it just explains a lot of the way that I fall into things as I have with Royal. So... yeah.
Yep. There it is.
There it is.
All right, Missy, do you want to round us out?
Yes, I do. I was originally going to talk about Spiritfarer because it's a good game. But I actually have not beaten Spiritfarer yet. And I also haven't beaten the game that I'm going to talk about because that would be weird. But I feel like...
Jesus Christ. Can you win the game of life?
I don't know what that would look like.
Yes, exactly.
So what I actually have invested more time in, probably not as much as Red Dead Redemption 2, but close, is Blazeball, which we have talked about before, I think in episode 4,
which is posted after this.
It will come out after this.
So, okay. just to be extra wild here.
Be super wacky.
Blazeball, I'll give the super, 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 super brief version, which is it's an online absurdist baseball simulator around which has built up an incredible community of fan artists, of writers, of people who do stats, like just an incredible array of talent. And it all stems from just these simulated baseball games with funny names, like
players with funny names.
Yes, yes, like Elena Bella Hollywood or Sun Scotch or whatever. I did not anticipate getting very into Blazeball, but I kind of did in the same way that last year I was very into Gels Marble Runs, which are just when the person who runs the YouTube channel puts a bunch of marbles in a race. and that's all it is.
I got
really into it with my husband because sometimes you just want to be into a low stakes thing. And part of the reason I asked Zora to write a hype piece for Blazeball for SideQuest was because I didn't want to know what Blazeball was because I could figure that out easily enough myself, right? Even though you really can't. But I wanted to know, like, what does it feel like to play it? And so Zora wrote us a wonderful piece that did convince me to give it a shot. And I'm glad I did because... we've kind of been discussing, I don't really participate in fandom that much. Part of it is that I'm shy. Part of it is that I'm awkward. And it's just not something I do. So joining the Blazeball Discord and then like ending up, you know, within a week, ending up being the person reorganizing all of the Houston Spies' lore and then starting HoustonSpies.cu and then like it was a really wild experience. And I think it's because Blazeball hits on some fundamental things that I just really like, which is communal storytelling. It's the same thing that appeals to me about like tabletop RPGs and storytelling games. I also really like the randomness angle. I like that the game itself will throw me a curveball. Not literally. They don't name the types of pitches being thrown.
Oh, what if it started?
God, I would live if they had signature pitches for the players. But I happened to join right at like just before the players, as in the people, the real people in this world, following Blazeball, did necromancy.
Yeah.
I happened to join just before that happened. So I happened to join, I think, like right on this wave of incredible excitement and tumultuousness, because things got really tense for a while there. But it really has been this like amazing thing to be a part of, even at the same time as it has kind of reminded me why I don't get that much into fandoms. It's just a lot. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're in a Discord with like 30,000 people.
Is it 30,000?
It's a lot.
We did this on the other episode too, but I'm constantly like
amazed. Yeah,
it's amazing how many people are in there, especially, you know, because it's still in beta.
Oh my god.
Yeah, but seeing the incredible amount of work that has been put into it, and like seeing like the wiki grow into this like incredible fandom archival project, like it's amazing to see. And I think that it has really been, I mean, the game itself is in a sense, in some ways, about like community organizing. Not to get too deep into the lore, but the Unlimited Tacos managed to get all of their pitchers stuck in peanut shells, and the game, like the game developers through the game responded by making this almost a narrative about striking. Mm-hmm. Not as in baseball striking, as in like worker striking,
right?
And that sort of laid bare some of the themes of the game about collective organizing. And some people within the Houston Spies have started doing like actual literal union training for fans of the game,
which is super cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like it is absolutely amazing to see this go on and see the vehicle for awareness and change that fandom can be. Mm-hmm. And that has been a really amazing thing to be a part of, even at the same time as I've realized that part of the reason I don't get involved in fandom as much is just because I prefer, like, I love to talk about stuff with my friends, you know. Mm-hmm. I love to get really excited about whatever with like a handful of people. But when it becomes like 30 people or 300 people,
yeah,
or 30,000 people, it consumes me in a way that is not fun anymore.
Yeah,
I've always had trouble navigating fandom spaces just because of their vastness.
Yeah.
Like, it feels very much like wading into a pool of humanity and like faceless voices on the internet. And I do a lot better with, you know, 4 or 5 people whose faces I know.
Yeah, I think there's a trust also between smaller groups. Like, mm-hmm. if I trust my friends, obviously. So if we disagree about something, then I know it's not like the end of our friendship or whatever.
Yeah.
But when it comes to navigating a space with 300 people, the smallest of the numbers, like there are 777 Houston Spies fans on the Discord as of yesterday. So that's a lot of people, right? And it becomes very stressful, I think, for me to, like, if I upset one of those people, or if I'm afraid I might upset one of those people, instantly the situation becomes stressful rather than fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's very hard for me to navigate. So I've had to take kind of a large step back. But that's not really Blazeball the game's fault, because I think it's incredible to see the way that it has grown up and become this like community of people with all different interests, building this space around what is essentially like a random or a procedurally generated series of baseball games.
It also feels uniquely 2020, not in the sense of like 2020, the discrete year between January 1st, 2020 and December 31st, 2020. But like this moment in time, all of technology and like predominantly Western culture, though not entirely, because people are baseball fans from like all over the world. the culture and the technology has reached the point where Blaiseball could happen.
Yeah.
And it feels so emblematic of like the current moment in time, and even more precisely July 2020 is the distillation of a weird lefty nerds on the internet.
It was very interesting to come in to this when the world is on fire, and then to play around in a space where the world is also on fire. it has really been a really incredible thing to participate in, and I'm really glad that I got into it, even at the same time as I look back at September, Melissa, and I go, hey, maybe slow down a bit. Maybe log off a bit. Have you considered that? Just because it was a lot to be a part of, but
did, and it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think exactly what you said is true. It feels like such an encapsulation of 2020, where everything is like at its highest stakes, both like literally in the game, and then also in the like sort of meta the interactions between the fandom. And when I say fandom, I mean all of it, like the people doing data analysis and making bots to tell you who to idol in each game. I mean people staging a sort of in-universe, multiple sort of in-universe law trials about crimes. I mean people writing thousands upon thousands of words of fan fiction. I mean the fan art, all of it. People doing live broadcasts on Twitch.
Sports casting.
Yeah.
At the same
it kicks time. Ass.
It rules. The sports casting was one of my favorite things.
Yeah, it kicks ass. Especially when I was working. It was kicked ass.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was gonna say Spiritfarer, but I think Blaiseball is it, even if I have had to take a rather large step away from it, just because sometimes it's good to have things take up a large percentage of your brain. Looking at you, Red Dead. Sometimes it's not.
Sometimes it's too much of your brain.
Sometimes it's too much of my brain. Much.
Yeah. So those were our two games of 2020. I guess six total. We set low and achievable goals here on this podcast, but that's okay because we do achieve them.
It's true. And that's nice. It's nice to achieve.
So nice to achieve something.
any last thoughts before we...
I do want to say that Spiritfarer is really lovely.
It is really good.
Next episode that comes out after this one, our episode 4, which is already recorded, we talk about like playing games in community. And I talk about playing games with my friend Kat. And Kat and I are playing Spiritfarer right now. And it's we discovered that it actually has a two-player mode. So we can both play together.
How is the two-player mode? Can I play
It's great. It's brilliant. It's really simple. Do you remember Super Mario Galaxy? Did you ever play that?
Mm-mm, but I've played Mario games.
So basically in Spiritfarer, the two-player mode, one person controls Stella, who's the main character, and one player controls Daffodil, who is Stella's cat.
Cute.
And Stella and Daffodil can do all of the same things, except Stella is the only one who can, like, start conversations with other characters. But Daffodil can, like, do all the chores, and the camera respects both characters equally.
Oh, cool.
And it's the two-player mode. It's great. So it means that Kat and I can both like run around our boat doing chores. I just have to be the one to talk to people to like advance the plot.
Yeah.
And it works perfectly. It's exactly what we want out of a game for us to play together. So that's my little nod to Spiritfarer.
It's great. It is. It really is. Unfortunately, I have had it interrupted by the need to play Hades. And I mean need because my other podcast, Fakey Girls, was commissioned to do an episode on it. So
literally.
Yeah, like literally I have to play it. So otherwise I wasn't going to, because it's me, this one of the only people on Earth to not enjoy Supergiant's other games.
That's not true. It's not just you.
No, it's me and Nola.
It's you, Nola, and Patrick Klepek.
Really? I didn't know.
Yeah, he thinks that they're clunky and not very fun to play. Well, before Hades for everybody. Hades is
yeah, it is a good... I've not played their other games, but Hades really is a quality game.
Just, I mean, if we're at like honorably mentioning things, I think that I put more hours into both Hades and Fire Emblem Three Houses than I did Final Fantasy. But both of them were games that I really love and enjoy and like have thought about constantly.
Hades is kind of doing the Red Dead thing for me, where I'm like,
oh, it just takes your whole brain.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to play it because I was afraid I would like it.
But like those games rule, and if I had a like a best games of 2020 list, I think they would both outrank Final Fantasy. But Final Fantasy fucking changed my relationship with playing games.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm justifying this so heavily. It's a list. It's two games. It's fine. I'm allowed to do what I want.
You're allowed.
I designed this exercise.
All right, so that'll do it for this episode. Let us know your games. Not the best games, not the most important games, but like the games of 2020 for you. Because I'm curious. I think that this is really interesting. Like one of my honorable mentions that I didn't even think about was, I did think about it, was A Bewitching Revolution. Just based on like how nice that felt to play in 2020, but like I didn't need to mention it within this space. So, and I did it anyway.
That's how we cheat, baby.
Yep. So I would love to hear more about like other games. Obviously, we have a post that came out from our website, sidequest.zone, that kind of covers some of those. But like, I always want to hear more. You can find us on the internet. Our website is sidequest.zone. Our website Twitter is @sidequestzone. I'm Melissa. I'm the editor-in-chief. You can find me at Melissa Brinks. I have been tweeting a little bit more recently, and then I regret it every time.
Yeah.
But I'm there sometimes, so you can find me if you want.
I'm Zora. You can also find me on Twitter at ZH Gilbert. I don't tweet very much, but when I do, it's apparently about Tales of Berseria and how it perplexes and alarms me.
Yay. And I'm Nassim. I have been somewhat tweeting-ish at Jamsternazzy.
Very nice. Thank you. Big thank you to Alexander Nakarada for the use of the theme song Base Thee, which is under a Creative Commons Zero license, which means it's in the public domain, essentially. Thank you for coming to my very brief talk about what Creative Commons License Zero is. Also, you should join our Discord if you're a patron. I think it's $1. It's $1 a month. So if you're listening to this, you already have access. I'm bad at using Discord.
Same.
I say, having just talked about Blazeball for fuck knows how long.
We should talk off mic about ways to use the Discord. Because
yeah.
I would be thrilled, I think, to... I was doing a Final Fantasy X live blog, and then I consumed my Final Fantasy X time with three separate Tales games because my brain is broken. But I would be happy to just start talking. I need an outlet to talk about Tales. Mm-hmm. I need an outlet so bad. And I don't think that I have the capacity to write game diaries posts, partially because I'm almost 30 hours into Tales of Berseria. And so it's kind of late.
Yeah.
One of the other Discords I'm in has a general Scream channel.
Oh my God.
Which might be
incredible.
Might be replicable.
Anyway, we might do more stuff with the Discord. We'll talk off mic about it.
Cool.
Yeah, good call. So that's it for this episode. Welcome to 2021. Let's all collectively make this a better year than last year.
Yeah.
Whatever we can to make it better for the people in our lives, the people that we come into contact with on a daily basis. Whatever we can do, let's do that. And on that note, everybody go take a nap. Round two.
Yeah.
Good. I can still hear all of you.
Okay. Document is open. Twitter is also open. Let's close that.
Yeah, get out of there.
Ugh. Okay. What order do we want to go in?
We could just do what's in the doc.
It's me, Nassim, and you, which I'm fine with.
We could do that, and then we could just alternate games. So like, you go first game, Nassim goes second.
Oh, cool,
game.
Okay.
I go first. I go what? Not like that. Not what I just said.
Yes, I understand.
The way
I understand.
That makes.
So yeah. We will start with me doing Monster Hearts, and then we will move on. And I'm changing my mind. We will start with me doing Final Fantasy VII, and then we'll move on because okay. I want Monster Hearts second.
Perfect.
Because I don't want to like be like rounding out the podcast with Final Fantasy. I would rather my coda be the game that's like that has been more pervasive and like kind of fundamental.
Yeah, I'm gonna swap mine too.
To my year experience. So I'm gonna do that physically.
Oh.
That's not necessary. I'm just the way I am.
I'm also really pleased by how much I'm enjoying Hades. I made it all the way to Hades.
That's great.
It's funny because Gabe and I have been playing at night, and so we see your name pop up playing Hades. So we're like, ah, this is playing too.
Wait, guys, we
have like a handful of
send y'all my friend code when I'm done or when we're done.
Oh yeah,
oh yeah, hell yeah.
I have only a handful of friends on Switch, same. And three of them were playing Hades at the same time last night.
I also only have a handful of friends, but I feel like among them should be the people I run a video game with.
Don't be ridiculous.
Okay, Missy, do you want to kick it off?
All right.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. Then you can. Do you want me to throw to you again?
Yeah. Yeah. Pitch me again. Pitch me again.
All right. I hate this.